The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. Welcome to another special episode. And I'll tell you tonight, right out of the gate, tonight, Spike TV, 9 o'clock Eastern, Bellator will be live from Thackerville. I want to give a quick shout-out of support to my teammate Chris Sunshine Williams, who is making his Bellator debut. He's on the undercard. And I'll tell you, told you this before, the match I'm most interested in, it's not the main, it's not even the co-main, but I like Honeycutt and Lovato of everything. For me, as a fan, that's the one. That's the main event. Jacob, I'll tell you what. I'll tell everybody what. Alpha Brain from Onnit. Guys, it's a safe and natural supplement. It helps support memory, focus, and cognitive function. Right now, you can go to Onnit and get a free bottle of Alpha Brain. All you got to do is pay $5 for shipping, and they're going to send you a 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain right away. This is the same 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain that sells for $35 at Onnit.com, but through this special offer, you can get it just by paying the shipping. Go to onnit.com/Chael. onnit.com/Chael to get your free bottle of Alpha Brain right now. You know, Jacob Gaethje, Eddie, Saturday, finally. What do you think? They're fighting for, let me tell you what's cool about it. I don't know who the marketing guy is behind this, but somebody said these guys are fighting for the title of most violent in the UFC. And whoever made that off-the-cuff claim is a goddamn genius because it's stuck, and both the fighters popped for it. That both the fighters are now doing interviews saying, yeah, we're fighting for title, most violent in the UFC. They both love it. They both want it. It's caught on. It's caught my attention. We got a fight here?
As soon as I saw that on the card, I was more excited about that than Holloway and Aldo. I honestly was. It was weird. Yeah. They aren't fighting for any championship, as you're saying. But you look at them. You could even just look at the records even. What does Eddie have? 3 losses? Maybe, if even.
Ever.
Ever.
Ever. Not just UFC.
Gaethje's undefeated.
Yeah.
This is a good one. I was like, that's the one I want to see.
Yeah, before we get our little Twitter busters letting us know he's got 4 or 5 losses. I mean, you get the point, though. It's a handful of losses over a career that led him to a world championship. It led him to a record gate of 17.1 million at Madison Square Garden, taking on Conor McGregor. No, the guy's something special. Gaethje, I mean, the word's out on him, but I'm not brand new to the party because I was commentating for World Series of Fighting where he was king. So I got to see a bunch of his fights. And so many people thought this, you know, this coming out party against Michael Johnson, and what an awesome performance. All of that is true. It just wasn't a unique performance for Gaethje. It was just the first time that he had done it, you know, with the organization, the UFC. He'd been doing those same kind of fights. He's crazy. I mean, he is wide open, doesn't mind getting hit. You don't hear that very often. A lot of guys say it to sound like tough guys. I mean, I'm just saying that's his. He does not mind. He'd take it right in the face. What, moving forward, throwing punches and kicks. He's reckless as hell. I mean, expect him to get hit a lot. Some people that try to criticize him say he's going to have a short career. That's not a bad critique. A guy that fights like him is going to take some damage. He wants it. He expects it. It could shorten his career. That's fine. I don't know what the hell that has to do with Saturday night against Eddie Alvarez, because that shortened career is still a long ways down the road. When I look at that, though, and as impressed as I am with Gaethje, and I don't think he's ever lost. No, I'm right. He's undefeated. As impressed as I am with him, a win over Eddie would change things, man. Eddie's a special talent. And when you do talk about something like Gaethje, who does get hit a lot, welcomes it, right? Itiro Gotti style, Frankie Edgar style. Don't get hit by Eddie Alvarez. That recipe just hasn't worked out. All right, let's move on. I got a special guest. My friend Nick Aldis is back. We have nothing prepared to talk about. We're two guys that are going to visit, decided to record it. So, Nick, let's get started. What's happening, man?
Hey, Chael, good to hear from you, and congrats on your 300th episode. I just saw your tweet.
You know, I appreciate that, and I didn't even know. You know, you come down here, and the weeks turn to months, turn to years, turn to 300 episodes. Very nice of you to congratulate me. Thank you very much. But, yeah, I didn't even know myself. So good little marketing play for me, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when you're as busy as Chael Sonnen, you know, and you just got media out the wazoo, you know, you just, these things tend to pass by a little bit, I'm sure.
And there's the shine, my man. I appreciate that. Hey, so what's going on? You're getting knee deep here in the NWA. You sent me some couple of clips, and I thought it was very sharp. Quite frankly, I thought it was better. And I loved the NWA. You know, they now call it classic wrestling, and ESPN even shows it. You're talking about the Nature Boy and Dusty and all of these great memories. I thought, as far as production value goes, the clips that you sent me of today's NWA buries the NWA that I grew up on and I still love.
Well, I think that, you know, that's a necessary thing, because obviously we're in, you know, 2017, about to go into 2018. So when I was first approached by Dave Lagana and then by Billy Corgan, you know, to be a part of the NWA and to really be almost sort of not the only wrestler, but really the sort of one of the first two sort of featured wrestlers in this new project and a completely new way of presenting the product to people. I really didn't know what to expect, and then when after a lengthy conversation with Billy and he kind of described what his vision was for it, I was just so on board, because it very, very, what my vision of what I think a viable pro wrestling product in 2017 to go against the WWE would be, which is this. It's basically all the qualities that people liked about the NWA before, but with an updated modern feel and approach.
Yeah, well, I love it. Hey, do they have a TV deal yet, or is that the step they're working on?
No, I mean, we're talking really early days here, Chael. I mean, like they called me in the summer. We were in the middle of getting ready to move, and Dave Lagana called me, and obviously I worked with Dave at TNA, and you know, we had a fairly good relationship, you know, and it was just one of those things where I knew he was somewhat loosely involved with some stuff with Billy, and I knew that when all that Game of Thrones craziness went down at TNA with Billy and Anthem and Jeff and everything else, I knew that Dave Lagana had decided that he felt that Billy had got the raw deal there, so had decided to move on, and Billy had basically offered him a salary to kind of be his full-time producer on a new project, and that was about as much as I knew about it, because I was staying fairly out of all the drama. And then when he started explaining it to me, and you know, I sort of expressed my interest. They just wanted to know what I was doing and what I was into, you know, because they know that I have a very doing things in it, and I'm not going to just take any booking just for the sake of doing it and all that. And once we chatted for a while, I hung up and felt good about it. And then 2 minutes later, my phone rings again, and it's Billy, and he wants to discuss it all with me, you know, which is very cool, because I didn't really have much of a relationship with Billy Corgan, because his first set of TV tapings for TNA when he was there on the creative team was actually my last. My contract expired. So I really didn't have much of a relationship with him, you know, and so it was very cool to hear him describe what his vision was. And it was, I have to tell you, it was so different to what I expected it to be. I don't know why, but I guess because he's an eccentric sort of rock star and, you know, and he's very artsy and everything else, I just assumed that he'd be into all this like hipster wrestling, which I can't stand. And then when he started describing like, oh, I just missed the days where it was, you know, two guys who look like men just beating each other up in an athletic contest that people can enjoy and, you know, and not feel like an idiot for watching. And I was just sort of went, oh, okay, I can get on board with this guy 100%. You know, he talked about growing up in Chicago and Dick the Bruiser and all these, you know, these people that influenced him. It's very interesting because, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect that from, you know, the Smashing Pumpkins guy. So it's a very cool time.
Hey, Nick, I'll tell you what, the one great thing about going to house shows and on all levels and even WWE, I could compliment. You know, they're so sports entertainment. I still like the product, and I'm not complaining about it, but there is a difference between professional wrestling and sports entertainment. When you go to a house show, you are much more likely to get professional wrestling. And I really like what you just said. And I'm largely I'm kind of a Jim Cornette, Mark, and but I do kind of see things the same as him. I still need to see – I still want to see two guys that look like they're in a fight where they're trying to compete and they're trying to get the pinfall. I just really like that. So it's refreshing to hear that, and that is one thing about the house show model. And even the NWA may have to change a little bit once it starts to go on TV, but that's the one refreshing thing that you can still get when you buy a ticket, sit down in your seat, and you're there live.
Sure. I actually, it's funny you mentioned Corny, because I was going to ask you if you saw the Flair 30 for 30 on ESPN.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I got to participate in that for about 10 seconds, but yes, I saw it.
That's right.
Loved it.
Of course you did. Sorry. Of course you did. I saw it. I watched it twice, and there you are. But there was a quote in there from Cornette, which was such a really great way to describe the difference between the NWA and the WWF in the 80s, which was, he said, you know, the NWA was the Boston Celtics and the WWF was the Harlem Globetrotters. You know what I mean? Like, when you were at one, you felt like you were watching serious athletic competition, like two guys trying to win. At the other, you were seeing some showmanship, the best showmanship on the planet, and great athletes with tremendous skill, but you kind of knew that what you were seeing wasn't necessarily to be taken 100%.
Right. No, I get it. One is a game, one is a contest, and one was a show. And I agree with that. And there's even some people that will talk, you know, to go in a little different direction here, but there's people that will criticize Flair and say, well, he couldn't have made it in the WWF in the 80s. And we'll never know. It's only talk. But I kind of tend to agree. He was a little more straightforward. He was outspoken for where he was. I think maybe he would have just been one of the guys lacking a little bit of the physique in the 80s.
It's an interesting discussion. It's one of those hypotheticals that no one will ever know, you know. But I don't see, my personal opinion, I don't think that, by the 80s, I don't think Ric Flair could be a middle of the road guy anywhere. As long as he was given the time, he was gonna get over and be the top guy. You know, at least in the way he presented himself. I think that, like anything, Flair is probably the least vulnerable to booking out of everyone. You can see that from the fact that he was tasked over the years with getting a lot of guys over who weren't necessarily, you know, the greatest hands in the world, but nonetheless, it still rings true that ultimately it depends on who they put you with and who, you know, and what they write for you. Even back then, it's like, I think if he'd have gone to New York and he'd have been a part of that mix, if he'd have been booked in, you know, as a top guy, he would have owned it and been a viable opponent for those guys. I mean, it's I think it would have been, I don't know how I would have felt about seeing him and like Bruno, you know, that might have been difficult. But then, you know, Rick is such a talent and such a savant, like he was just in there, could just make anyone, you know, could adapt and kind of use his stick and make it fit with anyone. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's the best of all time.
Well, there's certainly an argument for that. I really think that he played his career right, though. I tend to subscribe that maybe he wouldn't have been as big in the 80s in the WWF, and the way that he waited and the way that he timed it and the way that he stayed the big shark in the smaller pond. I just thought it was a really brilliant, whether it was intentional or not. I just, if you look at all the timing, how everything lined up for his career, it just seemed that he made all the right plays at all the right times. And frankly, I'm glad.
Sure.
I'm glad we don't know the answer. I'm glad he did stay where he was, because regardless of the answer, could have he been the top dog in the WWF or not, when he finally did come over, he went from the top right back to the top. It just seemed to all work out for old Rick. It really did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I think that, you know, like timing is everything in this business. It's like, you know, look at Steve Austin in WCW versus Steve Austin in WWF. I mean, that there are sometimes you have to be in the right place where the sensibilities of the fans are changing and the shift in momentum is happening. And that's, you know, that's something that I feel quite strongly about with Billy and the NWA. I think that, you know, going back to what we were talking about before, the comparison was WWF was entertainment, you know, and at that time they were the only guys presenting that product. So it was interesting and it was exciting and it captivated a mainstream audience. You know, fast forward to today, now we're in a situation where entertainment is all everyone's getting. So maybe there is an appetite now for a bit more of a serious athletic product. That's my hope anyway with the NWA.
Yeah, I subscribe. I think you're right about that. Hey, I took in the Survivor Series. I enjoyed the hell out of the product, but I still couldn't help as a critic to be a little surprised that at the end of the night and at the end of this wonderful production, the three guys that we're pushing are Shane McMahon, Triple H, and Kurt Angle. To me, for longevity, for a main event, for one of the major pay-per-views of the year, that was a little bit of a head-scratcher. And I thought, I don't know if this is wonderful that Kurt Angle, Triple H, and Shane McMahon are the three guys getting the big shine tonight.
Yeah. Let me qualify this by saying I have to tread carefully when I discuss WWE, obviously, because my wife works there. And, you know, and obviously there have been discussions and there's, you know, never say never as far as my own career. But I have heard that you're not the only person to say that. And it does seem a little strange. I mean, in fairness to them, the ending was kind of set up for Braun Strowman to really be this sort of focal point. You know, he's been a great example of a success story for them as a new guy. But yes, there was those things they're very difficult. Those Survivor Series, when you've got eliminations like that, very difficult to execute without pissing somebody off as far like in the audience as far as, oh, my guy, you know, he should have stayed in longer. And it's very difficult. So I empathize with them in that respect because you've got to stay true to your storylines, but you've also got to protect you guys. And ultimately, it's very difficult to get that right without harming somebody, you know. And unfortunately, like I think, for an example, like Bobby Roode, you know, obviously guy I worked with, you know, for, you know, many, many years. He's the guy who's like, he's a victim of his own success because he gets labeled in that category of, well, he's so good, you know, he can come back from this, you know, like, and that can be a dangerous place to be in sometimes. I personally thought Brock and AJ should have been on last because to me, Brock Lesnar is the main event. You know, any time he shows up, he's the main event. And I just don't think you're going to beat that atmosphere and that big fight feel. And boy, what an incredible performance it was by both of those guys.
So explain this to me because maybe this went a little bit over my head, but I was lost with that ending. And I was lost in this regard. Why would Braun be mad? And I know that they were trying to build some heat and say they're mad. And Trips is like, hey, we got the win. And Braun's going, yeah, but you screwed me over. And I'm going, well, no, I'm with Trips here. We got the win. What, you guys are teammates. You won. Well, he never hit you.
But didn't he do something? But didn't he Kurt, right? Like, because Kurt had Shane in the ankle lock. Isn't that right? And then,
So Trips gets involved. He pedigrees Kurt. He pulls Shane for the cover. So Strom thinks that Trips is going bad, but then he double crosses Shane. He never hit Braun. He didn't pedigree Braun. I didn't understand why there was heat between those two.
I guess because I think the idea was supposed to be that he was upset that he hit Kurt, you know, because Kurt's the Raw GM. Like, so he's, you know, Braun's boss. And, you know, Hunter was, you know, being selfish, I guess. I mean, that's how I took it to mean. I don't recall what had happened at the TV prior, other than the fact that, you know, Hunter had squared off with Kurt there as well. So I thought that was supposed to be the deal there. But I admit, it was... it wasn't my favorite thing I've ever seen.
How cool was it, though, to see Bobby Roode finally get his shot? I mean, right, if anyone deserves it, that's the guy. And, now all of a sudden he's main event teamed up on Survivor Series pay-per-view. I thought that was pretty badass.
Yeah, and I feel that way. I feel a great sense of, you know, great sense of pride. And, you know, because it's kind of like I'm, you know, quite a bit younger than most of those guys, but at the same time worked with them for a number of years. And it's kind of like seeing Bobby and Joe, especially and AJ, it's almost like with Joe, especially, it's almost like seeing like my big brother kind of get, you know, finally get his, you know, get what he deserves, you know, cause there was a lot of speculation about those three guys, you know, whether they would ever go, you know, cause by the time it was an option or a possibility or whatever, it was, then the discussion came about their age and things like that. And then to see them all now would just, just fit in so well, because and it's a validation for a lot of us who were part of TNA during what we thought were their best years, you know, from like 2009. For me, it was 2009 to 2015. You know, we there was a lot of time where we felt like that show wasn't getting the credit it deserved. We were prime time on Spike, audiences growing. We were doing great numbers overseas, you know, and it was like, we're a good show here, guys. You know, we got a lot of great talent. It wasn't hyperbole. We really believed in it. And I think now seeing the cream of that crop, you know, fitting in so well in the WWE, and to me shining, you know, over a lot of that roster, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know that's been a drawback on Bobby, where people talk about his age. You know, I think he's 38, but you could tell me he's 28 and I'd buy it. I think he looks younger than AJ Styles if you just look at two guys. His body's not slowing down, man. He's motivated, fired up. I went and caught him in Portland at an NXT, and he was awesome. He did, everyone looked up to him. I mean, all the other wrestlers, I went in the back, they just admired him so much. But I will tell you, as a fan, he was such a bright, shining diamond that it was almost awkward. It was almost like, okay, for $12, why am I getting to see Bobby Roode? I'm not paying enough money to get to see this guy. He doesn't belong here. I get why you guys would want to keep him here, but he doesn't belong. He belongs on Monday night, and that's just the reality. When he finally walked out, I was like, oh, thank God. Thank you guys for doing this.
Right.
I was, like, grateful. Not only happy for him, but I was grateful. Like, this is where he belongs.
And what a great thing they did with him. Perfect example of what WWE does so well and why they're so successful is that, you know, Bobby is really essentially presenting the same package he's always presented. This absolute world-class wrestler whose timing is impeccable. He has that presence. He commands a space, a ring general. But they give him that music and that robe and that entrance. And it just, to me, was just like, that's it. There's the missing piece, you know, and it's just so brilliant. You know, that's how we all looked at the WWE back in the day. We all looked at it as that place where it was like, you know, when you get there, they just, you know, Vince McMahon and his team, they finish you off, they polish you, and they find those couple of missing pieces, and then bam, you're a star. And I thought, like, Bobby Roode was such a perfect example of that with that glorious music.
Oh, and there's no way around it. Yeah, you know, he comes out, same thing at NXT, they're working that glorious music, it just all worked. But I mean, you could even go to the highest of levels to prove your point, The Undertaker, under some other gimmick, who knows? Who knows what would happen?
Well, he was Mean Mark in WCW, and no one remembers that.
Sure, the skyscrapers, you'll remember that, you know, to go even further back. But
yeah,
it all matters, and it just all matched up for Bob, and he was like, oh, thank God. And, you know, there are some guys that you just buy. Rick Rude is one of them. I bought him as a badass. He looked angry, he looked pissed off, and when he came through the curtain, I bought it, and Bobby's got that same thing. Even when I see him in social settings and passing, he's got them damn crazy eyes he puts on you, and I always think, okay, is Bobby pissed off? And then you talk to him, he's the nicest guy. But he's got that look, man. He's got that look of intensity. It's just the way it's just the way he's built.
Yeah, well, he's got that demeanor. He's Canadian, you know, he's quite serious. He's a very serious guy. We used to call him Simba, like, because if he was, I don't know where it came from. I think Eric Young gave him the name, but I think this is when he had long hair. But it used to be like, because if he was hungry, he was one of those guys where if he was hungry, he was so ornery and so miserable to be around, and it'd be so funny. You know, if he had to wait too long at a restaurant or, you know, something like that, or if we were driving and, you know, it was time for him, because he's one of those guys who's always been very on point with his, like, I have to eat every 2.5 hours or whatever it is. You know, I'm a pretty body guy too, you know what I mean? But there was this whole group of us, you know, like, I think every wrestling company has this, where it's like, there are gym guys, where it's like, no matter what, wherever you go, you can pretty much guarantee that there's going to be the following guys in the gym, you know what I mean? And at one point it was like myself, Bobby Roode, Frankie Kazarian, you know, Rob Terry, obviously when he was on the road and stuff like that. But Bobby, when it came to food, like, that was always the funny thing, is that when he came out, it'd be like, oh, Simba's getting angry, guys. Better watch out.
Yeah, his insulin levels.
He's just kind of got that demeanor.
Bobby, need a cookie? That's
Yeah, he's just got that demeanor. I know exactly what you mean. He just has that demeanor where it's, he's a very guarded guy. Like it takes a long time for him to let you in and kind of, you know, to get to know you a little bit. But he's a good dude.
What's it like for you watching games of your son coaching?
Agonizing.
It's a family affair on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
You know, I didn't know there was actual work here.
Recent guests include Rich Eisen, Judge Judy, John Harbaugh, and the Sklar brothers.
That was definitely a great moment to tell our parents, hey, we're not going to go to law school. We're just going to go ahead and do a job we could have done out of high school.
Thanks for paying for college.
Exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet. Get episodes every Tuesday at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
What's going on over at Impact? You know, who's at the head of the reins now with Jared? I thought that was a work. When that came out, I was like, that's not true. But apparently it is.
You know, I knew that you were going to ask me this, and yet still I'm unprepared. Like, I have no clue.
But it's not an angle, right? I mean, am I being a mark on Jarrett? No. Really is out. He's out.
Yeah.
And probably not coming back. Is that fair?
I couldn't answer honestly. I mean, I'd be speculating at best, because I genuinely, like, I did do a little bit of work with him again last year. Or is it the beginning of this year? Beginning of this year, where, it was purely freelance on a handshake. They did offer me a contract, but I turned it down. My little brief flirtation with them again was, you know, was a little bit of a sore spot, but at this point I'd become so dated to them that I was, in a way, I was just annoyed that I even went back at all. But, out of some loyalty to Jeff and wanting to sort of see that, you know, do well, I did go back on a handshake but didn't sign anything. And it was mainly to facilitate, you know, getting the belt on Del Rio and setting all that up, because he was the shiny new toy and they wanted to go with him. And that was fine. I was fine with that. Like, but the only thing that kind of bothered me was the fact that we had discussed, you know, signing, and then they sent me this Anthem agreement, which was just a joke. I couldn't even, you know, it was just, I just said, you know, I can't sign this. And Jeff kind of laughed and said, I know, you know, I have to ask. And I said, okay, cool. And he's like, well, look, let's do it like this. We'll work on a handshake. You know, I trust you, you trust me. And we've got this UK thing in the works. We've got ITV on deck. And, you know, once we get this, and that's network television, you know, like, that was the World of Sport thing. Which, you know, had that happened, would have been really, I mean, potentially huge. So, you know, we had that in mind. I even went and did a press conference with ITV and for World of Sport, announcing it was coming and everything else. And then somehow they blow that deal. You know, I don't know what happened there. I feel like somebody was, there was clearly someone was saying what they wanted to hear. And then when Anthem came in, they kind of moved the goalposts, and I think there was a bit of a problem there between the three-way communication between Jeff, Anthem, and ITV. But I don't know that, so I'm only speculating. You know, is that for me, the whole situation was basically on a handshake. Like, look, you can work as freelance, you know, and once we get this UK thing all taken care of and on paper, we'll be able to make you an offer that, you know, we think will be, you know, that you'll accept. And it was a week all encompassing. I said, okay, that sounds good. And then of course they blew that deal. And then, next thing I know, like, you know, Jeff sending me all these dates, like, hey, can you be at these next TV tapings and these ones? And then I said, okay, I'll put them in my calendar. And, you know, I was happy to do it on a handshake. I just didn't want to sign a contract. I didn't want to be, I just felt like things were so uncertain there was just no point being under contract. And then, like, next thing I know, like, they just go completely cold on me. And Scott DeMore was like, oh yeah, we can't do anything more with you because you wouldn't sign a contract. And I just went, you know what? Like, I'm done with you guys. I can't deal with this, like, sort of this dishonesty and this sort of, this clearly there was miscommunication there, but almost like deliberate miscommunication. I don't really know. And then, I don't want to speak too much on this because, despite, you know, what I feel like was some pretty shady dealings with me on Jeff's front. I still like Jeff. And so as far as like his personal issues and stuff are concerned, I don't want to go too deep into it, but I'll just say this. Like, I went to a couple of those tapings when I went, as you know, on a handshake, and I came away from them and I came home and said to my wife, like, I got a bad feeling about like something is just going to hit the fan somewhere. I'm paraphrasing, but it was definitely something to that effect.
You could feel it. You could feel it coming.
I could feel like I felt like there was going to be some kind of between that. There was, you know, the personalities that were very prevalent there at that time. And some of the stuff that was going on, I could feel like there was going to be some kind of explosion. So I just kind of gracefully backed away slowly and said, okay, best of luck.
Hey, so I'll ask you this in conclusion though, but my see, here was what was weird for me. So, and this is one of the reasons I thought it was an angle and a work and one, why wouldn't I, right? When's the last time we did get shot straight with the storyline? Of course I could think it's a work, but, when Jeff got outed, he's an owner of the company, I think 11%. And unless he sold his side, I just didn't fully understand how you could out him or if it would be forever or work a few kinks out. That was kind of the sticking point for me why I marked out for it.
I have no idea about the ownership now because it's such a mess after the Aerolux, Anthem, Billy, you know, Dixie, legal debacle, you know, and all that. Like, I don't even know what the situation was with Jeff owning Global Force, and then somehow it was like he was employed by Anthem, you know, as a I guess executive producer or something to that effect, or head of creative or whatever. So I don't know if he had any ownership actually. I'm not sure. And as far as like the Global Force thing goes, I guess, I don't know, maybe he just sort of licensed it to them, or maybe he sold it, I don't know. But I know that, like, after he got out, didn't they go back to being Impact, like, they changed the name again? I kind of look at them now like an ex-girlfriend that you just kind of go, oh, what did she do this time, you know? Just kind of, like, someone tells you, and you just sort of go, oh, I don't even want to know. I just feel over it.
Nick, I think the fact that you and I just went in circles for the last 5 minutes and we both worked for them tells everybody what they need to know, man. It's disorganized. Yeah. That's just fair. I like them the same as you do. I got no personal problem. But to say that it was there was some confusion there. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
that's really the moral of this story. There was some confusion there. Buckle it down. Move forward. All right. So what's new with you? What's new on a personal level? Where are you at now? Are you in England? Are you in the States?
No. We're in Richmond now because obviously we had moved to St. Cloud in Florida, which was, we had 5 acres and we had the horses on the property and all the rest of it. And it was nice down there. I didn't love Central Florida as much as I did the Tampa Bay area where I lived before. But we had been there sort of with the anticipation that things on the wrestling side were going to sort of wind down a little bit just because of the way the business was with Mickey and obviously and Donovan and everything. And then, like always in wrestling, you can never really predict where things, you know, Mickey gets called to do a one-off for NXT with Asuka, tears the house down in Toronto. Next thing you know, Vince is like, I want her back on the road. You know, she needs to be here. So obviously that opportunity comes along, you have to take it. But for me, as far as my career goes, difficult to be doing a ton of bookings because we didn't have a lot of support down there. Whereas here in Richmond, where her family is from, we obviously have the support as far as childcare is concerned, because, you know, weekends, you know, you need people to watch deep. Like, for example, this weekend I'll be in Waukesha, Wisconsin for House of Hardcore, and she'll be wherever she is for WWE. So, you know, my sister-in-law or mother-in-law or someone has to, you know, will have to come and watch deep, and that's just the way it is. So we just made that decision. Okay, it's time to head back to Virginia. We got a great new place. I love it. I hear actually it's really peaceful. It's a nice, good pad. But, yeah, and then, you know, as far as everything's great, you know, the business side of things, you know, we've invested in a couple of businesses that are starting to return a little bit for us, and we're just purely sort of an angel investor in that sense, so nothing to really get our hands dirty other than a bit of paperwork now and then, and then yeah, things picked up with Billy and the NWA, and actually it was funny because I wasn't really sure where things were going to be heading for me on the wrestling front, and then. Tommy Dreamer has House of Hardcore, which is arguably as, you know, another sort of top sort of independent that's, you know, really gaining some serious kind of momentum and traction. And he just signed a deal with Twitch, which is, you know, which is online streaming. And, you know, I think like apart from Netflix, Google and Apple, they're like they get the most video traffic online out of anyone. So, I mean, it's pretty, you know, and they're owned by Amazon, I believe. So, I mean, pretty, you know, pretty good people to be involved with. And Tommy and I have a good relationship. And then he kind of approaches me and says, I want you to be my top heel, you know, like so I've been having a blast going to the formerly ECW arena in Philly. And I mean, geez, we had so much heat there the last time. They were throwing trash at us and, you know, and just the whole thing. It's just been such a blast being there and working with the guys there. So it was kind of like, it was an interesting thing because I went from being somewhat inactive for a minute there to being suddenly sort of aligned with these two companies that are both fledgling, but like both have real serious kind of energy and momentum. And it was kind of interesting because the presentation is obviously vastly different between the two, but partly because of me and then partly just because of their own existing relationships that they had, like Billy and Tommy and Lagana and Tommy and stuff. We already started kind of intertwining our angles and stuff like that. So it's been really cool to sort of be a part of this new sort of process because the NWA approach is just, I'll tell you, that's the thing that most excites me. Like I've wrestled a ton of, you know, sure. Would I have loved to be in the ring with, like, you know, Shawn Michaels? Absolutely. You know, Triple H, you betcha. Undertaker, of course. You know, I didn't get to check off all my bucket list guys, but I did get to wrestle a ton of my childhood heroes and, you know, even beat like incredible sort of. So it takes a lot to get me excited about just a match. You know what I mean? Like at this point, I've done enough where it's like, not going to get that excited about someone calling me and going, oh, we've got a show and we want you to wrestle so-and-so at a thing. Like there are certain guys who are sort of coming up that I enjoy wrestling because they're new and exciting. Like I got to wrestle Jeff Cobb recently, who I think is really good, and different guys like that. But for me, you know me, like I enjoy the process, the whole process, the TV process, the creative process, the whole package, because that's, you know, that's what gets my juices going now. Like a match is a match is a match. You can see, you know, endless hours of pro wrestling matches any day of the week. All you got to do is turn on some sort of internet enabled device. When I saw the way that the NWA was approaching content and approaching the business, man, I just got so excited because one of the first things I said to him was, look, I'm a casual MMA fan. I'm certainly not watching, like, I don't watch Bellator. I'm not watching, like, I occasionally watch Bama because, like, I have a bit of a relationship with them in the UK and they invite me to their events and stuff like that. But for the most part, like, I'm the guy who, I'm going to buy the pay-per-view if it's someone who, you know, who gets my attention. Like, obviously, I watched, you know, I watched Bellator when you fought, you know, at MSG. But, like, for the, it's about the whoever the guy is.
Sure.
Like the last pay-per-view I bought was Bisping and GSP because I love GSP and I love Bisping. And it was like, what a great story. But I'll tell you what, I always watch, regardless of whether I buy the pay-per-view or not, is I always watch the embeddeds and I always watch all of the sort of ancillary content that they put out because it's so well produced and so compelling. Like the same with boxing. I watched Canelo and Triple G. I was really excited for that. You know, except that finish, but the 24/7s, God, I couldn't get enough of them, you know, and those things, because I just love the way they're produced. So we had that discussion fairly early on, and they kind of said, it's funny you should mention that, because we've got this concept called 10 pounds of gold, and which is the, I think I sent you one of the links to one of those, and they're just these short, you know, 7, 8, 9 minute, these YouTube videos that they're telling you a story piece by piece, and they're not commanding you, you know, to get, we're not asking for a ton of your time, and we're not asking you to sit through a bunch of matches, and, you know, and we're not exclaiming like, this is going to be the greatest thing you've ever seen. And, oh my God, like, can you wait for the hottest wrestling action in your life? You know, because no one's buying that, you know, like, that's an outlandish claim.
I agree. It came off as straight. And Nick, I'm with you. You know, I don't. If you're talking MMA, the punches and the kicks. If you're talking boxing, the punches. If you're talking pro wrestling, the backdrops and the suplexes. They're not enough. They're not enough. Right. It's the behind the scenes.
I am convinced.
That's right. I am convinced that 24/7 has 100% efficiency rate. I don't believe you can watch a 24/7 and then not care about that boxing match, and whether you buy it or not. I believe if you watch it 24/7, you're going to care, gonna go, even if it's after the fact. Hey, who won that match? I was kind of interested in that.
Right.
They're just so effective. Exactly. And, you know, to your point, 10 pounds of gold, it was the same thing. You know, I didn't even know about that school teacher. I didn't even know. I didn't know any of that story. They, you know, show him, pick him up at the airport and stuff, and all of a sudden, well, I'm in. Let's see what's going on here.
Right.
But it's not about the backdrop. It's not. It's all before they get in the ring. That's where the excitement is.
Sure, sure. Because people want to know. You know, you can go, especially now, you know, you can turn on, like I said, you can turn on any device and see original in-ring content any day of the week. And like between Ring of Honor and New Japan and, you know, PWG and, you know, Evolve and all these, you can see like these mad wrestlers doing like this, you know, insane sort of stuff that defies gravity and defies, you know, athletic prep. But, you know, but sometimes it defies logic too. And to me, you know, that's cool. If you like that, that's cool. Like, no one, you know, we're not trying to dismiss that or anything like that. We're just saying we believe that there is, you know, that people want to be emotionally invested, and the best way to do that is to make them care about you. You know, and that's what we're doing. And it's been so fun to be part of that process. And yeah, the tentative plan is to set up like a series of like studio tapings, like the old school style kind of NWA studio tapings. But again, like you said, like we said before, with an updated feel, you know, like doing it in a way that befits, you know, the style of delivery in 2017. And that's something that I'm looking at and going like, man, I can't wait to sink my teeth into this. And obviously for me, you know, at this point in my life, I'm 31. I've put in my 10,000 hours. It's nice to be with a company and you know, with a boss like Billy, who is acknowledging that and not just going like, oh, shush, wrestler, you know, you just be a wrestler, and, you know, you don't tell us how to write. We don't tell you how to wrestle. It's like, it's very collaborative. You know, like if there's something that comes up, they might call me and say, what do you think of this? What's your take? They're not asking me if, you know, I don't make any decisions, but they're getting a range of perspectives so that they can, you know, so that they can make the decision going forward. And I'll tell you, like, I've been very impressed with the way that Billy approaches the business, because, you know, it could be very easy for him to be led down a primrose path by a bunch of shyster, carny wrestlers, you know what I mean? But he's very switched on, and he knows that the best way to do it is to get this collaborative effort of you know, contrary opinions and put out a product that he thinks, you know, fits, but at the same time staying true to what he thinks, you know, that there's a gap for. And I'm with him 100%, honestly. Like, there are, sure, you're never going to agree on every single thing. Like, there are sometimes I go, I might have done that slightly differently, but ultimately the overall feel of it and everything else, I've had people in the business, like, just hearing your feedback now for the first time, you know, all the way down to just people who, we've had feedback from people who said, see this, I can watch, you know? And so I feel like they're doing something right, and it's cool to be a part of it. And it's like, that's sort of where we're at now. So it's pretty exciting. So like I say, this week I've got House of Hardcore in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Blizzard Brawl. And it's like, then I go right back to that sort of in-your-face attitude kind of pro wrestling, which I love too. So it's really cool to be, you know, part of these two sort of organizations, because they've got, and then they're sort of interweaving. So it's kind of very, it's a very cool time, because they're, like, if you go online, you can see the, there's a segment that NWA posted where, you know, with featuring Tim Storm, myself, at the arena in Philly. So it's a different audience, but now they're sort of interweaving House of Hardcore and Tommy and the NWA, you know, and it's sort of like, you can see all these people go, like, it's so interesting watching people, like, try to psychoanalyze it and pick it apart, like, to the macro level, where they go, well, maybe they're going to do this and do that. And once you can get people doing that, like, you're onto something. And so that's sort of where we're at. It's very exciting.
Well, I love it. I'm happy you brought me in on it, man. We will all support you, and I really appreciate talking to you. Have a wonderful day, and keep it up, my friend.
Thank you, Jay. Always good to talk to you.
Cool. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Aldis. There it was. Cool guy. Good to catch up with him. You know, this NWA product, Jacob, I'll tell you, this is just getting off the ground, but they sure got a lot of the right pieces. He sent me several clips. It was really well produced, and why he said they didn't have a TV deal. They're still getting off the ground, man. People are still hearing about him. Good to catch up with Nick.
Definitely, yeah.
Before Nick called in, we were talking about Eddie and Gaethje. And I would just tell you this final, I'm just looking forward to enjoying a match. And but I will give you this final piece, is it is relevant the way Gaethje fights. He is going to get hit by Eddie. He is going to let Eddie hit him. No matter how crazy that sounds to you, he is. I assure you. He has taken everybody's punches in the past. This is a different deal. It is a different power. It is a different speed. It is a different range when you're dealing with Eddie Alvarez. If Gaethje can get over on him, I just want to call it now. I just want to say it. It's a big deal, and he deserves some credit. At the same time, Gaethje is undefeated. I believe 16-0. I know I'm very close. If Eddie gets over on him, he also deserves that same credit.
That's why this is a fight for most violent fight, though, especially from Gaethje's point of view, because he lets people hit him. He's gonna walk up with a bloody face.
Sure,
Eddie's gonna hit him by all means. But then, yeah, if you're competing for the most violent fight ever title, you were saying earlier he's gonna have a short career. Those go hand in hand, but at the same time, especially if he plans it. That's what makes it more entertaining, in my opinion. That's what makes this fight so fun, because it's two guys just wailing at each other. They're competing for most violent fight.
No, nobody's flipping the script either. I mean, if you think for one second that these guys are going to go out there and be intimidated and go for the takedown, first off, they're not. But secondly, these guys are so close in wrestling. You know, Gaethje would be the more decorated wrestler. He's not the better wrestler when it comes to MMA. Eddie's not going to throw him down, not going to be able, even if he wants to. Gaethje can stop it. And the same goes if you flip that. So, yeah, man, these guys are going to stand up. We're going to find out who the most violent fighter in MMA is. I'm into it. I like the storyline. I think it was good marketing, but I think it was good marketing because it is true. And, you know, there's another one on the card. I like Holloway versus Aldo, or Holloway versus Aldo. I like that a lot. I really like I didn't enjoy Aldo the champion. I didn't enjoy the attitude that came with that. He's not wrong for having it. It's a very unique spot. But he did have a different attitude as champion. And we see many guys have it. He just wasn't unique. Although the challenger, although the hungry, you know, I'm trying to get back to the top, is a very refreshing guy. It's, you know, you've got all the skills in the world with Aldo, but now you're bringing a good attitude to the table. You're willing to take a short notice fight for an opportunity to recapture what you once had, to live out the dream that you started in this business with. It's refreshing, and I'm enjoying it. I don't think he beats Max. I mean, I've already seen him fight. I know Max can beat him. My eyes told me that. But I like it, and I do like his attitude. And there's not many times, I give Aldo a lot of compliments through his career. Having a good attitude and being somebody you can get behind is not one of them. But that's changed, and I mean that in a positive way.
Well, how many champions do you know that actually took being champion well? if you know what I'm saying. Like, how many people actually want to get there and we credit them? It's like, okay, yeah, you've got a good attitude, you're a fighter, you want to get to the top. When they get to the top, how many people have handled holding that belt well, as far as like, that was good, you carried that extremely well,
or just anything?
There's not many. There's really not many. So I could give him a pass on that one.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. No, he acted the way humans act when they get there. You know, it's very rare that somebody will have some power and not attempt to wield it. And so many of the champions, it's a false power. They actually don't have it, but they believe they do. And that's kind of where the off-puttingness comes from, you know, when they start coming out and making the calls and making their own determinations and trying to control the destiny as though they're an executive in the office that they work for and collect a paycheck from. And that's where some of the allure gets lost. But he's got it back. I mean, this is meant to be a positive, to give him the positive that I'm trying to. I have to discuss why I didn't have it before for him, where I didn't have the same adoration and appreciation. And I don't want Max to ever lose it. He probably will. To our point, Max Holloway, who's like the coolest guy in the sport right now, is probably going to end up being a dick, right? Because he's got the recipe. Young, successful, and famous. That just doesn't work out well. Now, before I count the rotten eggs on Max, I should, in fairness, disclose, he sure hasn't done it yet. He has been the breath of fresh air. He has been that young leader in the locker room that you hope other guys are like. I'm just ready to be disappointed at some point when Max comes out and decides to be too cool for school. We haven't seen it yet. He doesn't deserve any insults yet. I'm just ready for it to come. Because to your point, we keep seeing it, right? We just keep seeing it.
Yeah. And to throw another disagreement, though, at that argument, I like it when they start acting like...
Oh, you do?
I do. I
oh,
do.
You're into the cocky guy.
I totally am.
Oh,
we,
okay.
We need a few cocky guys here and there. I'm just pointing out it rarely doesn't happen.
Well, there's a plot twist that I wasn't expecting. Oh, you're saying it's a good thing. Maybe I need to reevaluate. Perhaps you are right.
It's great for entertainment. It's great for sports. As far as an athlete's concerned, it is great when a champion goes up there and he's like, oh... Yeah, I'll take whatever. But I like it every once in a while when some guy thinks he's
when they start sitting back calling their own shot. See, I hate it, but now you've changed my perspective just like that. I see what you're saying there. You need a little bit of that. You need to have both sides. We can't just sit down here and be happy and compliment guys all day. We got to have the other side of the coin too, don't we?
Yeah, we need a bad guy in here and there.
Otherwise, we don't have a show. I guess you're right. You've made an excellent point just that quickly. One more fight, though. And I need to see this one. I need to see this one. Ngannou. I think I'm saying his name right. Francis, right? He is coming in with some major hype. He would have been under the radar for me. I wouldn't be out talking about Ngannou. But Dana White came out of nowhere, out of absolute nowhere, and says, not only do I believe this guy is going to be UFC champion, I believe he's going to hold that belt for a very long time. And I remember when Dana said that, everybody goes, what? Who? What are you talking about? Ngannou? I think I remember him. I think I saw him fight one time. It was one of those reactions. But when you're getting that kind of praise from the leader of the industry, his opinion matters. And that's really what made all of us take a step back and go, okay. Yeah, I guess he's got a good record, a good build. I guess he's got some good wins. Okay. But he does not have that marquee name. And you have to have that. You just do. Overeem is a marquee name, period. Any which way you want to do it. Do it in MMA, do it in kickboxing, any which sport you want to do it, Overeem does bring that to the table. So this is a match that I need to see. If this guy's as good as they say he is, it's going to take an Overeem or somebody like that. You can insert a few guys, but in this case, Saturday night, tomorrow, it's Overeem. Need to see that match. And I want to buy into the hype. I love to be a fan. I can't do it till after this match.
Well, if Ngannou does win, it almost feels like a passing of the torch, if Dana's right.
In many ways.
Yeah.
In many ways, if not a passing of the torch, certainly a coming out, here I am, I've arrived.
Yeah.
And if he is to win, it is likely by a knockout stoppage. And if you can stop or knock out Overeem, and many guys have, but those many guys are all superstars. So if you can get a win like that and beat him at his own game, beat him in period, but beat him at his own game, you know, don't forget Overeem's the same guy that's beat Verdum twice. I got Verdum as one of the greats ever. And you could have that argument. It always comes down to paper. What did he win and where did he win it? So who knows how he'd come out of that argument. However, if you're just talking about tools and technique, ability and diversity for the heavyweight division, it is Verdum as best ever. It's Verdum. History's new scripted drama series, Nightfall, premieres Wednesday, December 6th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Guys, watch it. Don't miss this. It's set in medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict. One headstrong and courageous Templar knight, Landry, will lead his order of warrior monks on a life-or-death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. And guys, whoever controls the Grail controls the world. I'm very excited for this show. I've got no insight. They didn't give me a screener. I've only seen the commercials. It hasn't been compared to Game of Thrones, Jacob, but that is my comparison. Anytime you're talking about something medieval, and then you're talking about this kind of production value, talking about this kind of expense, and nobody does TV like History. They do have a unique way of doing it. It looks killer, man, and I think they're gonna be right up there with it. And frankly, it can't get here soon enough.
When does this come out?
It's gonna come out Wednesday.
December 6th.
Yeah, no, so this Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah, ooh. Next Wednesday. There you go. That's okay. One way. That's one way to say it. Wednesday, December 6th. Isn't that easier?
I think you were right saying this Wednesday.
As do I.
Yes. Okay. I agree with you.
Hey, you know what else is going down this weekend? Submission Underground.
Yeah.
Submission Underground post. Sunday. By the way, if you want to go, send me a text. Turns out I got connections over there. But so many great matches, man. So many different storylines. You know, Anthony Smith's coming to town. You know, he was right here on this podcast saying he'll take on anybody, and he meant it. A lot of guys say that to tell you the names that back down from that guy. He's got no business in there. This isn't what he does. He is a fighter. He needs the punches and kicks. He needs to wear out his opponent. He needs to put his toughness and heart against the other guy. That's what he does. He doesn't give a damn. Everything I just said, he doesn't know anything about it. It's a competition. He is going out to win, and he's taking on David Mitchell. He's taking on David. David's a killer. I know that's the first thing you're thinking. But to tell you the decorated champions that will not get in there with Anthony Smith, they are so scared of his courage. It is his courage that has backed everybody down. There are so many stories, but I'm going to cut to the chase on this. It's co-main event. It's not even the headliner. Shields and Gilbert Burns are going to headline. Co-main event, though. Fabiano Scherner, my coach, taking on former UFC champion Tim Sylvia. How cool is that?
That's an event. This wins this Saturday. Like tomorrow.
Sunday. It's going to be Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, flowgrappling.com for anybody that wants to watch it. But yeah, man, it's loaded up. I mean, I haven't even got into Wagner Rocha taking on current tough champion, Jesse Taylor. I haven't even gotten into AJ Agazarm versus Nathan Orchard. I haven't even got into these matches. I'm just telling you, when Tim Sylvia is going to come to town at 300 plus pounds and is a world champion, and he's taking on 303-pound Fabiano Scherner, there's something to see there. You know, I got some pushback on this. You want to hear something? From my own partners, from Flo. And Flo goes, well, you know, Tim Sylvia, he doesn't have a black belt. And that was a big problem for them. I said, guys, yeah, his belt isn't black. That's true. His belt is gold. It's 12 pounds, and it's gold in color. And they're like, yeah, we apologize. Yes, Tim Sylvia will do. He's like, yeah, you bet your ass Tim Sylvia will do. That's Tim Sylvia, ladies and gentlemen.
Plus, you know what they say. You're not afraid of the belt. You're afraid of the wearer.
I like that. I didn't know they say that. Do they say that?
I saw it on a T-shirt once.
They say it now.
Yeah.
Boom, there it is. All right, you got anything else for us?
I'm good.
Hey, we got a fun weekend. We got Bellator. I'm going to give a reminder. We got Bellator tonight. Those UFC matches we're talking about, Saturday. And listen, we got Submission Underground on Sunday. It's a fun night. We're going to have a killer week next week. We're going to recap it all. So until then, for Jacob, I'm Chael, and you know who you are. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, it's Jay Moore, and it is time, finally, for America's Lakers Podcast. That's right, I'm going to be hosting America's Lakers Podcast. My man Aaron Larsoul, an analytical genius, he's going to bring to the table what I can't every Wednesday. America's Lakers podcast exclusively at podcastone.com, the podcastone.com app, which I highly recommend. You can rate and review this podcast on all Apple products. And guess what we're not going to do? We're not going to bathe in the gossip and the gratuitous negativity that's been swallowing Los Angeles whole lately. Who did what? Who snitched? Who said what? How about truth? How about facts? How about statistics? How about rotations? What's Luke Walton thinking? Who's underperforming? Who's overachieving? Who's rewarded? Who's coming? Who's going? And what are we going to do with all that delightful, delicious cap space? America's Lakers podcast with me, Jay Moore, and my man, my brother, Aaron Larsoul, every Wednesday, podcastone.com.